Jennifer Bryant from the Empowerment Journey podcast, where we provide information and resources to help you overcome personal challenges to achieve professional success. And my previous topic centered and focused on domestic abuse, where I identified what it is and I provided resources to how you can move in forward in your progress of getting away from it. So today I'm honored that I have a featured guest of Ms. Mildred Muhammad, who is an award-winning global keynote speaker, international expert speaker for the U.S. Department of State. She also is a five-time author, actress, internet TV talk show host. She is victorious. She's a warrior. And she's out there paving the way and giving a voice to a topic that's often silent and has no voice, which is domestic violence abuse. And she is the ex-wife of Mr. Muhammad. And I am honored that she's given me an opportunity today to share her personal details of her experiences in that relationship where it involved fear, abuse, and victim blaming. I also wanted to gather from Ms. Muhammad, like, what steps did she take to deal with that situation, the adversities that she faced from society, friends, and others, and how she was able to transform her mindset and to rebuild and to be able to be out here blazing the trails for others to overcome. So with that being said, Ms. Muhammad, thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me, Ms. Jennifer. I really appreciate you asking me to share my story with your community.
Yes, I am excited to hear more about it, because you and I both know that everything in the media is not true. And correct. We as a society, we come up with our own judgment and we begin to formulate a story in our minds of what we believe happened in the story. Now, you live this story and continue to live it. So can you spend a few moments sharing with the listeners about what it was all about? What happened? What were some of those details of your experiences involving Mr. Muhammad, your ex-husband?
Well, many people don't know that I was the intended target of the DC sniper shooting. But the prosecutor stated that the reason and their theory was that he was killing innocent people to cover up my murder, so that he could come in as the grieving father and get custody of our children. Domestic violence was not a part of the trial because they would not have been able to get the death penalty, so the judge left that part out, which is why many people don't know about me. And because they did not know about me, then that's when the negativity started. Since they could not get to him, I was the closest person to him. So the community said to me, if you would have stayed with him, then he just would have killed you. If you would have stayed on the West Coast, then the people on the East Coast would still be alive. How dare you call you and your children victims when none of you were hurt or killed? And how dare you bring this drama into this quiet community? So victim blaming was at the highest degree for me and for my children. My children are in their late 20s now, and they are just now hearing the negative comments that were said about us at that time. I could not allow them to hear that because they would not have been emotionally balanced to handle that. They were already trying to deal with the fact that their dad was killing innocent people to cover up the murder of their mom. So I told them that regardless of what anybody says about him, regardless of what he's done, God saw fit to bring the three of you from the both of us, and you have every right to love him and to pray for him. I will not allow you to have to choose which parent to love more because you love both of us. And I gave them the opportunity to express their pain and their anguish, their frustration, without causing them to feel guilty. I just had to push my stuff aside in order to help them to understand their own emotions and to handle them, and then we move forward.
Wow, that you said a lot. I gleaned a lot from that response. And I want to make sure that I captured some of these things that you talked about. One was, you definitely put your children in front of your own needs, in essence. And secondly, you were like, hey, this is not going to be one parent against the other parent. We're both your parents. And there's a relationship that you need to have with your dad, and the relationship that you need to have with your mom. And you equip them with the tools, and you also served as a safeguard, and you insulated them from the drama and trauma that went along with this experience. So my podcast is about overcoming personal challenges. Mm-hmm. I know that you had to work with your family, but what were some of those things that you finally said, you know what, I got to deal with me? And what did that look like in terms of dealing with post-traumatic traumatic stress disorder, and what did you put in place?
Well, I was diagnosed with PTSD mm-hmm. as a victim of domestic violence, because a lot of victims are diagnosed with that. It's just not a military issue.
Correct.
What I did was I journaled, I fasted, I prayed, because at that time, I couldn't talk to anybody. Everybody blamed me. Absolutely everybody. Even if I tried to talk to someone and told them what I was planning to do. Well, I don't know why you would do that, because A, B, C, and D. I said, you know what? These people crazy as hell. I'm not.
Oh, Lord. I can imagine your facial expression going along with that.
I cannot.
Oh, God.
So what I did was I went to the library. I got a book on counseling, and I learned how to counsel me and my children myself. I told my children that the only way we're going to get through this is with the truth. And the only way we can do that is I will tell you the truth about your dad, even if it makes me look bad. So we're going to deal with the good, the bad, and the indifferent about your dad. And in that process, when it was just me, there's a song back in the day. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, because you know, I'm not doing that. It was a song by BT Express, and it's called Shout It Out, if you want to look it up.
Okay.
Because back in the day, we had songs that helped us to deal with frustrations and disappointments. They don't have many songs like that today. And in this song, it says, when you're going through something, go somewhere by yourself where no one thinks you're yelling for help and shout it out, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I went to a park, and I backed in, because I'm always security minded.
Yes.
I turned on the radio loud, and I rolled up the windows, and I screamed, I cried, I just let it out. I, if I had the strength, I would have jerked off the steering column. That's how much pain I was in, because I didn't find anybody that I could trust, that I could deposit my pain. And that's the problem, right? Because if I can't trust you to hold my confidence, or if I can't trust you when I'm speaking to you that you're not judgmental or you've made up your mind of who I am before you even talk to me, then how can I talk to you? I remember riding in a car with a friend at the time, and I was in so much pain, I just started crying. She pulled the car over, turned it off, and looked at me and said, "You stop that crying right now. Stop it." I said, "Okay." She said, "If you're crying, what am I going to do? I need you to give me hope. So if you're crying, my hope is gone." I'm thinking, well, what about me? What about me? What do I do? Right? And so I went to that park for the first time, 45 minutes. Then I went back 30 minutes. Then I went back 15 minutes. Then I went back 5 minutes. And then I went back that last time, and I had no more pain. I had to deal with my pain on my own because there was no one available, emotionally available for me.
Wow. And I felt you when you said that. And people sometimes don't allow you to be vulnerable. And there's always an assumption that when you're being vulnerable and tears come out as a result of it, that you're somehow weak. That's
yeah, because
not
true. What's the first thing they say? Well, where's your faith?
Where's your faith?
Well, Jesus cried, right? He wept.
He wept. He wept. So he wept.
Were you telling me to be better than that?
Right. Right. Right.
So I took that as a lesson and put it towards how do I continue to heal and be successful at it. And so I went internally, mm-hmm. I went to journaling, I went to prayer, I went to fasting, I danced because I love dancing. Put PYT on and I'm done. I am done. I don't know wherever I am, I hear PYT, I am getting up. When I was in the shelter, they put that song on. I danced for 2 hours nonstop. It was on a loop. And by the time I finished dancing, I was exhausted and took a shower and laid down. And the next morning, I felt great. So dancing is one of the ways that I also go through my trauma. Because
right.
That's how you release your emotions and your anxiety. You got to find what's best for you. Some people will work out. Some people run. Some people journal. You got to find what's best for you because what I do may not work for you, and that's okay.
Correct. It's all personal. Okay. It's all personal, and it's all germane to your healing process.
Exactly, and it's a process, and it's not an overnight thing. And somebody tell you you still crying? Yes, I am. Because every tear that drops is one step closer to your healing. So you cry as often as you need to. And every tear that does not fall hinders your growth. Men and women, we have tear ducts for a reason. They are used to cry. Some men like
Absolutely.
Crying in rain, you know? So when it's raining and they're crying, nobody knows if it's the water from the rain or if they're actually crying. But you got to get the emotions out. You got to get them out. You just have to. I refuse
Absolutely.
To allow John to control me from a prison and from the grave. I refuse to do that. I refuse.
You said a mouthful right there because there are times when people allow others to still have control over them.
Mm-hmm.
And only we can control mm-hmm. what is going on. God controls our steps and order our steps.
Right.
So So thank you for sharing that part with me. And I'm going to take a break and then I'll be back at you.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Jennifer Bryant, life coach, career coach, consultant, speaker from Reaching Within, an Empowerment Journey. Welcome. I want to share with you about my 30-day journal to overcoming personal challenge to achieve professional success. It is a uniquely crafted 30-day interactive journal where I share my story of how I overcame traumatic events and climbed the corporate ranks from clerk typist to executive. This journal provides inspirational quotes, blank pages, and prompts that will empower you to reflect and set goals to achieve personal and professional success. These coaching prompts will help you reach within to balance your life through maintaining a positive attitude and mindset, enhancing self-awareness, managing stress, and handling disappointment. Reach within to regain your power to live your life victoriously and successfully. You can find my book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can order it directly from my site at reachingwithinempowerment.com. Hi, we're back with the Empowerment Journey podcast, and I'm interviewing Ms. Mildred Muhammad, and she has been providing us with nuggets of wisdom as well as letting us into the life of what she had to live pre the DC snipers situation and what led up to it, as well as what happened during, how the court system treated her, how police treated her, how family and friends treated her, and how she had to rebuild trust in people. And so, Ms. Muhammad, can you share with us, like, how did you go about trusting again? Because I know there's some safeguards that are definitely there. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I can't be around people I don't trust. I'm just not there. I'm sorry. I'm not fake. I can't do it. So as soon as I lose trust, then I'm out. When I was going through the process of trying to find my children, if you wasn't pouring life into me, if you wasn't encouraging me or praying with me or helping me to understand that process, then I could not have you in my life. I just could not. There was a lot of negativity already going around. There were a lot of people who didn't believe me. There were a lot of people who felt that I would not get my children back. And anybody who expressed that to me never heard from me again. I was protecting my spirit. I am protecting who I am as a person. It's nothing personal. I'm protecting me. And so that's how I am today. When I meet someone who wants to be my friend or in a relationship, I give you, and my son tell me that's crazy, but I give you 100% trust. 100%, I do. I've always done that. So in order for you to no longer be in my life, then you have done things to me that have caused me to lose trust and respect for you. And therefore, I have to back away. It's all about protecting me. And that's not being selfish. That's being protective. Because my mom used to always say, no one is going to take care of you but you. No one's going to be there for you like you. So you better love yourself enough to understand when people are doing you wrong and know that you don't have to stay there. And so that's what I do. I don't have to stay there. I don't have to feel guilty for not talking to you anymore. I don't have to feel guilty for making the decision to make my life more peaceful and better. I don't have to feel guilty for that, and I don't.
As you as you have every right. You have every right, because you, as they say, you know, you have to put your mask on first before you can start helping anyone else. And part of putting your mask on.
I'm not putting on a mask.
In terms of saving yourself. Like if you're on an airplane and it's about putting that, let me clarify that, about putting on your mask before you could put it on anyone else. So let me provide that context, because a lot of times we're out here, we're trusting people and different situations, but then we're losing ourselves to all of that. Mm-hmm. So you got to have boundaries in place. And when people cross those boundaries, you got to say, hey, that doesn't work for me. And that was part of you learning who you are. And I had mentioned during the earlier interview that during earlier in the interview about how you have appeared in TV shows, Lifetime Network, Movie Network series, CNN, I believe Oprah. You also have you're a 5-time author. So can you share a little bit with us about your book? And what it covers.
Well, one of the reasons that I encourage people to journal, a second reason, because the first reason is to get it out of your head so that you can understand it and heal from it. But within your journals, you're actually writing your own story. And then at the end of journaling, you pick out the part of you that you desire to share with the world. You don't have to tell people everything about you, just what you want them to know. And so in my journals, I took out the part that helped me and my children. I told my story about John. And my book is titled Scared Silent, When the One You Love Becomes the One You Fear. I didn't name it Scared Silent because I was quiet. I titled it Scared Silent because I had to work under the radar in order to move strategically to find my children before John would kill me. So I had to do it silently while being scared, but I still had to move, still had to find them.
Right.
I still had to put in the work. It didn't stop me. I was just scared. My second book, I'm still standing, crawling out of the darkness into the light, was creating a new normal for me and my children. Because that one starts with the execution and everything that me and my children went through in order for them to live. Because when they told me that he was going to be executed, I had absolutely no emotion. He was a stranger to me, but to my children, he was daddy. So when we found out this execution day, I kept my children home from school. And they wanted to look at TV to find out when it would happen. And once they said he had expired, my children went in 3 different directions. My son went in a room by himself in the dark. My daughter, Selena, she whimpered on the sofa. My baby girl hit the floor and just was screaming and crying uncontrollably. So I went to my son first. And I said, honey, you're okay? He said, Mom, I'm good. So when a man says I'm good, you know how many emotions is trapped in that I'm good? That's so many emotions in there. But he's not able to articulate
verbalize
that kind
what's
of
going
thing.
On. Yep.
So I'm good is as good as he can tell me. So I left him alone. Next, I went to my baby girl. I picked her up cradle her in my arms like you do a newborn baby, where their head is resting inside that elbow pocket. And I'm holding her, and she is looking right in my eye. And I know what she's looking for. And she's looking for some type of emotions that I am having, because her dad was just executed. And she's looking for something to connect with me to validate her pain. I had absolutely nothing. And she stopped crying just like that. And I said, honey, are you okay? She said, I'm good. So I go to my daughter, Selena. I say, honey, are you okay? She says, mommy, do you understand? Daddy was going to kill you. I said, yeah, I understand that, honey. But you know, you love your dad. No, I don't love him. I don't love my dad. I don't love him because he was trying to take you away from me, Mom. He was going to kill you. Do you understand? I say, yes, Selena, but you know what? He's gone. And you got to let this go.
Right,
you're
going
to kill yourself. You got to let this go. So she started crying. She's cried about an hour, and they all cried themselves to sleep. So the next day, they come into my bedroom because they come as a group, and the baby girl is the spokesperson. So she says, Mom, can we go to the funeral?
Wow.
We never got to talk to them. We don't have closure. I said, y'all get that closure stuff from me. No, Mom, we need closure. Can we please go to the funeral? I took them to the funeral. They went in. I stayed out in the parking lot. And when we left, it looked like a burden had been lifted from their shoulders. Everything I did was about them. It was about making sure that they had the proper control over their emotions, where they could understand them and move on from them without being hindered from emotional growth.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Everything I did was for them. And so,
and so let me ask you this really quickly. So saying that, has any of your children, or have any of your children come back to you and say, Mom, I know what you did was for us?
Yes. They said that they appreciated what I did for them. And they appreciate me being their mom.
That's awesome. That's amazing. That's amazing. I have to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Because I told them that I never wanted to have children to suffer. And whatever I can do, even if it's at my detriment, to make sure that you guys are okay, then that's what I'm going to do. And sometimes, I mean, look, they wanted to watch family videos, girl.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. I can't even imagine, like, the inside emotions. Like, how did you navigate that question? I mean, when they
they said, Mom, can we watch the videos? You can tell us. Can you narrate and tell us what Dad was thinking?
Oh, my God.
But I did it.
Wow.
I did it. I pushed myself aside, and he was laughing at a certain thing, and well, Mom, what was he laughing about? I told him what he was laughing about, and I did. They needed.
Oh my God!
They needed. They needed that. They needed that. Wasn't about me. They needed that, and that's what I gave them: an opportunity to feel every emotion that they were feeling without feeling guilty or that I had a bias. Well, I don't understand why you're doing that with your dad. I'm right here. I never said like that. I did not then, nor do I now, speak badly to them about their dad. My son looks,
right,
walks, talks, laughs,
oh my goodness,
sarcastic, dresses just like him. I just look at him, and he said, I know I look like dad, right? I say, yep, you really do. You really do look like your dad in his younger days. Goodness gracious, man, you really do. And that's what I say. I don't say anything negative to him or make him feel badly, because that's in the genes. I mean, how am I going to change that?
Yeah, yeah, you're not. But that is so admirable, though. That is so admirable, and you are such an example of grace and such an example of strength. There are so many ways that you can go with this in terms of when we first met at, is it Achi? Is that how
yes,
we pronounce
Achi.
It? Achi.
Mm-hmm.
At the luncheon, and when I introduced myself, I talked about how important it is to be a change agent for the family, to be a generational changer, to be a legacy builder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who you are and more and huh. more. So you are silent in your presence, but you can feel your strength when you're in your presence. I don't know if you realize that, even with telling
not.
Your story, outside looking in, I'm telling you, that's you could sit there quietly and I could feel your strength. I'm big on energy. And your story and sharing your story today will help so many. And I explain to my audience, and when I'm out there speaking, our stories may have happened to us, but it's mm-hmm. about us to go out there to help heal others. And through your memoirs, through, you know, your books, through your appearances, whether it's on TV or in print, you are changing lives.
Tune in next week for another episode of The Empowerment Journey, as Jennifer Bryant completes her interview with Mildred Muhammad. Until next time.